Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
What's really interesting to note is that in the course of visiting with producers around the country, they all can hearken back to a time when they saw things this bad.
Administrator of USDA's Farm Service Agency, Zach Ducheneau, talking about weather-related disasters nationwide.
But never in so many different geographical areas. You know, in the Great Plains, South Dakota, North Dakota, Montana, we had some really dry years, both in the 70s and the 80s. During those, Minnesota was good. Kansas was good. But now we've got this so widespread, I think it's a clear indicator that our climate is changing, and we need to enable our producers to have the tools they need to join us in the fight to mitigate that.
This is Agriculture Today.
What we're doing this year to help producers kind of navigate that uncertainty and maybe just get a little step ahead for next year is offering producers the opportunity to voluntarily terminate their CRP contract, which would have been expiring this year, a little early, and start field preparation and start getting ready for next year after the primary nesting season this year.
That's the administrator of USDA's Farm Service Agency, Zach Ducheneau, talking about changes to CRP. Now, also rolling out a new program, the ERP, the Emergency Relief Program. What is it?
Well, the Emergency Relief Program is phase one of the crop-based assistance that was authorized in September by Congress for us to carry out. That's a $10 billion program. And as we heard input on how to deliver that program more effectively from the field, stakeholders and our staff said, please, let's do something different and better. So we listened and we took a look at what we could do in phase one to get the most applicants scooped up the soonest that we could at the lowest burden on our staff. So we used existing data that was available through approved insurance providers, worked very closely with our sister agency, RMA, and we're sending out today, this week, we're sending out forms that are pre-filled for producers. This isn't the WIP Plus. This is something far better, far improved. The WIP Plus program had a form with 200 and some fields to fill out. This form, the producer looks it over, works closely with their insurance provider or their insurance agent, makes sure the information is correct, checks a box that agrees to linkage, and signs that paper and sends it back in, and then we process it for payment.
And the other program is the ELRP, or Emergency Livestock Relief Program.
Congress specifically authorized us to deliver $750 million to livestock producers who were adversely impacted. And as you know, the standing disaster programs for livestock are not as mature as the programs that provide the safety net for our crop growers. So as we started to look at this, it became apparent that where there were these weather events, there is a body of data that exists. And again, heeding the feedback from the field, from our stakeholders, from our staff, a simple program. In the Emergency Livestock Relief Program, we use the information available from the Livestock Forage Disaster Program, LFP, and made the payment based on that information without the producer having to come into the office at all. Now, we understand that because of the nature of our programs and the alphabet soup, sometimes it's challenging to know what you may be eligible for and what you may not. Livestock Forage Disaster Program triggers based on the drought monitor, the U.S. drought monitor, which you can find on the internet. Probably even find a link on our webpage. So if you have a chance to take a look at that and see that, well, man, I would have qualified for Livestock Forage Program, and that would have qualified me for ELRP, turn in a late filed application. Because of the extenuating circumstances that existed and the fact that we're building a program on data, and you might not have been in there, we're going to be considering late filed applications for the Livestock Forage Disaster Program for 2021.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
During the pandemic, we saw how highly concentrated food supply chains left both farmers and consumers vulnerable. Essential workers were on the front lines without adequate protection. Farmers had no choice but to destroy the crops and livestock they could no longer sell. And millions of families did not have enough to eat.
At a Senate Ag Committee hearing on Thursday, the chairwoman of the committee from Michigan, Debbie Stabenow, addressing Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack.
The previous administration gravely mismanaged USDA's ability to address any of these crises. Under your leadership, USDA has implemented the historic investments in the American Rescue Plan and the Consolidated Appropriations Act to support local and regional businesses and get the supply chain moving again. And after 4 years of disastrous trade policies, putting our farmers back on solid ground with our trading partners has been no small task. This has been even more critical as Putin's unprovoked war in Ukraine strains our global supply chain, as we know, putting the food security of millions in peril and causing prices for everything from diesel fuel to fertilizer to skyrocket. While Congress and the USDA have responded quickly with humanitarian aid and resources to grow domestic production, we know there's more we can do together. USDA is also helping to empower small towns and rural communities through the bipartisan infrastructure law. USDA has expanded high-speed internet and is investing in roads and bridges that keep Main Street moving. Mr. Secretary, I hope you can expand upon how these investments will increase the quality of life for millions of people who live in rural America.
Now, the ranking member of that Senate Ag Committee is from Arkansas, Dr. John Bozeman.
This is an unprecedented time for agriculture. As we come out of a global pandemic, we confront a war in the breadbasket of Europe, which has choked off a sizable portion of the world's grain and oilseed production. Global food insecurity has become acute. My good friend David Beasley, the head of the World Food Program, recently told me he is now faced with the decision to take food from hungry people in order to give it to starving people. While U.S. producers are willing to help fill the gap, our farmers and ranchers face declining farm incomes and steeply higher input costs. And I've got some examples of that, and we'll put those in for the record. But USDA can play a constructive role to help American farmers and ranchers meet the challenges both here and globally.
And then the committee heard from the Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack.
As we all know, we're dealing with a situation involving infant formula, and thanks to the quick action of Congress, you all have provided the Department of Agriculture additional authority in terms of WIC that will allow us to work with those who produce formula in this country to create more supply. We just sent a letter to all of the state health commissioners, as well as to Gerber, Nestle, and Mead Johnson, indicating our willingness to work with them to provide waivers so that they can continue to expand contract brand options in terms of the WIC state agencies, allow the use of contract brand alternatives that were not previously authorized, as well as temporarily allowing them to use non-contract products to be substituted. We will pay the rebates in the WIC budget itself so the companies will not be at risk financially for these substitutions. I think it will help assist in expanding access to product.
Just one of the issues covered in the Senate Ag Committee hearing. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
There is an appropriate role of the federal government in ensuring fairness and transparency within all livestock markets. And that goes back to the Packers and Stockyards Act, which, as I mentioned, was originally passed in 1921.
Tanner Beamer is Senior Director of Government Affairs, National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
What is not the proper role of government, though, is to create additional barriers and extra layers of bureaucracy that's going to slow down adequate enforcement of that. You know, we have been waiting on the results of a Justice Department investigation into the meat packers for about 2 years now. And, you know, while we are waiting with bated breath for the results of that investigation, we really don't know what they have found. And so we are crafting legislation aimed at addressing a problem that we aren't even exactly sure whether it exists, and if it does, to what extent it exists. So there is a proper role for the federal government in this conversation, but it is not creating duplicative barriers and repetitive, redundant new offices, and it's certainly not mandating specific levels of specific trading methods.
And admits the Packers and Stockyards Act has been on the books now for over 100 years.
So that law was originally passed in 1921. It has been amended over the years to reflect the needs of an ever-evolving industry. And NCBA believes that the law in its current form is sufficient to empower USDA to make sure that everybody is operating above board. Remember, the Packers and Stockyards Act doesn't just deal with antitrust type issues. It also regulates how we calibrate scales at auction markets and other places so that we know that the cattle that are being sold are being attributed the right weights. They also oversee trade practices, registration of livestock dealers at auction markets. There's a whole lot going on with that piece of legislation, or excuse me, that law. It's been around for over a century.
He also addresses a recent bipartisan call by senators for the government to get involved.
Obviously, during the early 20th century, there was a lot of consolidation, much like there is today. And so Congress passed a couple different pieces of legislation, the Sherman Act and the Clayton Act, designed to ensure that monopolistic practices weren't acting to the detriment of other players in the market, and ultimately to the detriment of the consumer as well. And you're right, those pieces of legislation are not often used because it takes a lot to demonstrate that there is monopolistic influence in any given market, let alone one as complex as livestock. What I believe you're referring to is a joint resolution that was introduced by Senator Elizabeth Warren and Senator Mike Rounds, which would call for the Federal Trade Commission to investigate the meat packers for potential anti-competitive behavior. Now, again, NCBA is very supportive of oversight and effective management of the packing sector. But at this point in this conversation, we are, I think, using the packers as a scapegoat to try to avoid talking about the real issues that are causing heartache for cattle producers and impacting their bottom line. It is much easier for Congress to blame the meat packers for food price inflation than it is to address the conditions which are leading to skyrocketing costs for fuel, fertilizer, and feed. Those skyrocketing input costs are really what are affecting producers' bottom line, and they're driving prices up at the grocery store. But it's much easier to say that we're going to investigate the packers as a response to that right before they go home to campaign for the midterm elections. We would prefer that we, again, wait for the results of the Department of Justice investigation before we start passing acts like the Meat and Poultry Special Investigator Act, or we open any new investigations like what's being contemplated in this joint resolution from Senators Warren and Rounds.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Indeed, in my role as the commanding general of U.S. Army forces in Africa, this has weighed pretty heavily on our minds.
Commanding General of the U.S. Army in Europe and Africa, General Christopher Cavoli, at a Senate hearing on Thursday on the width and depth of grain delays.
The grain shortages that we're experiencing from both Russia and Ukrainian production being unable to come out of the countries in large volume or being sanctioned and not being sold are being felt on the African continent. They were felt very quickly. I was recently in Kenya, and there was a significant impact there already. We know that in other countries such as Tunisia, the prices have skyrocketed for basic foodstuffs. So there is food insecurity in Africa that is being provoked by the shortage of grain. It's of great concern. In many cases, these are countries that don't need an additional challenge, and those additional challenges we will have to help them with at some point. This will largely be a European concern because of the close connection between African security issues and European security issues. With regard to what to do about it, there are many proposals, Senator, being batted about right now, many different ways. Some of them are very, very positive. We think there are about 22 million tons of grain in Ukraine backed up waiting to be pulled out. Some of the ports we're attempting to use, the Romanians have made the port at Constanta available, only does about 90,000 tons a day. But the German Deutsche Bahn has recently stepped up. That's the German National Railroad Agency, and they are doing what they call a Berlin train lift, an analogy to the Berlin airlift, to dedicate trains to pulling wheat right out of the out of Ukraine into Western Europe. Poland has established a new border crossing regime with Germany in order to facilitate that. So I think some efforts are taking place. Much more remains to be done, Senator.
So are there any options? Can we get the grain out?
The first thing that we've been doing is probably the most important. It's not in the Black Sea. It's establishing alternative ways to get the grain out. So Deutsche Bahn, the German national train company, mm-hmm. has been conducting massive lifts of grain out of Ukraine right now, coming out through Poland, then up to the northern Germany ports for export. The Romania has opened the port of Constanta for outflow, which goes through the Black Sea, but not through a blockaded portion of the Black Sea. So I think it's going to be a combination of modes of transportation that we're going to have to use, and I look forward to contributing to it.
So from supply chain disruptions in Europe to the U.S., where ag Secretary Tom Vilsack says,
we have been working in terms of our ports to increase hours of operation. We are providing opportunities for pop-up facilities that basically take some of the pressure and congestion off of the ports. Our Department of Labor is working on expanding apprenticeships to be able to put folks behind the wheel of the of trucks that are necessary. We've worked with the Surface Transportation Board to encourage our rail system to basically make the investments necessary to have a more resilient system. As you know, the Strategic Oil Reserve has been tapped. We've obviously provided for summer utilization of E15. And there are ways in which we, as I alluded to earlier, ways in which we are at the Department of Agriculture assisting folks during a tough time that gets into the TFAP program, the SNAP program, the WIC program, and things of that nature. So it's a combination of all of this, and we're going to continue to work hard to find ways to bring costs down.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I think first and foremost, we're trying to figure out ways in which we can expand on what I refer to as the extraction economy. Right now, Senator, essentially farmers have two ways to make money. They can sell their crops or they can feed their crops to livestock and sell the product of the livestock.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack on Thursday in front of the Senate Ag Committee addressing a 14 million acre reduction in farmland over the past decade.
The reality is they need more revenue streams, and that's one of the reasons why the Climate Smart agricultural product initiative is so important, because it creates additional revenue streams for farmers. Also converting agricultural waste into more bio-based products, another revenue stream. So increasing the number of revenue streams is one avenue. Second avenue is making sure that farmers have access to the information about programs that are available to them. So we're expanding significantly the technical assistance, particularly to historically underserved farmers, because they are the ones who are most struggling and oftentimes are there either not aware or unable to go through the process of applying for the various tools and various programs we have to help them. So with these technical assistance grants that we're making to a number of organizations, we're now providing more assistance and more help so folks can get access to the programs. And then the final thing I would say is we obviously are continue to look for ways in which we can help beginning farmers and ranchers get started, and focusing on a variety of folks, including veterans. So a number of things that we're doing.
There's an issue that's brewing that USDA is on the periphery. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley.
2 weeks ago, the Solicitor General filed a brief of whether or not the Supreme Court should take a case involving widely used pesticide. In Iowa, we call it Roundup, but the big classification is glyphosate. In that brief, the Solicitor General flipped the government's long-held position that's been the position of the law since 1972 that FIFRA preempts state law. And then the Solicitor General argued even against the EPA authority that the law requires. Were you consulted on that in any way?
Senator, we weren't. We continue to work with the EPA in terms of crop protection programs or products in an effort to try to make sure that farmers and ranchers have what they need.
Yeah, and I think it's clear in the law that the EPA has this sole authority, and I think it's going to be a problem. if the federal government or if the Supreme Court would not take this case because state law is trying to go beyond what the FIFRA law allows. Since let's just suppose that that they would take this case and they'd somehow say that this California law is a legitimate law. Is the USDA doing any analysis that removing these products like Roundup from the marketplace would do to grain U.S. grain production? Because, you know, this seems to me that this has a big thing to do with the productivity of our American agriculture.
Senator, I'm not sure that I know the answer to that question. I'm more than happy to go back and ask our folks if they are in the process of reviewing that. We obviously have a lot on our plate recently with global food security concerns, and that's been my focus. But I'd be more than happy to check with our folks and see whether or not they've done that. And depending upon the outcome of the case and depending upon the nature of the decision that may be forthcoming, we'll take a look at it.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The seed cotton program being implemented in the 18 Farm Bill and then retroactively for the last year of the 14 Farm Bill was a huge victory for the cotton industry and certainly a much needed program to help mitigate adversarial systemic price decline that we see in the marketplace periodically just due to our global world market and challenges outside of a producer's capabilities to mitigate that risk.
Cody Besson is CEO of Lubbock-based Plains Cotton Growers.
So being able to participate in the PLC or ARC program has been critical. And it certainly performed and helped offset up to a certain point some of the risks and really low, quick price decline we've seen in the marketplace since the development of the 18th Farm Bill. Now, that being said, we are in the midst of discussions as industry and Congress begins to look at the development of the 2023 Farm Bill. And I do think you'll see some pretty broad brush changes. You know, one, by example, while we have had PLC and ARC, and certainly those are viable, important tools for risk management, but you've also seen a pretty vast array of ad hoc assistance that has come out over the last couple of years, even with the 18th Farm Bill. So like a WIP Plus or like a MFP or an ERP. And so there are certain things that will need to be done in this 2023 Farm Bill to help incorporate some of the lacking provisions that we've had to use ad hoc assistance for over the years, the last couple of years. And certainly I think you'll see that. I think there'll be a lot of appetite trying to build in some of these better performance measures in the 2023 Farm Bill. So that way ad hoc assistance is not necessary. You're needing to seek after it year in and year out to mitigate some of the discrepancies that currently aren't built into the current Farm Bill. Certainly everybody will be working toward that and toward that goal as we move the process along. Right now, Congress is still just doing oversight hearings to try to evaluate where programs underneath the 18th Farm Bill are at, how they've worked or performed, how they have not, and how they can better address the lack of performance in certain areas or other programs moving forward in the debate and discussion. But length of time still here to go. Again, the bill itself that we're operating underneath won't expire until the end of 2023. And so that will allow for a lot of things to happen. We'll finish out through an election cycle. We'll have virtually a new Congress, be it either Republican held or democratically held. And so a lot of education will need to go into this process as well of current tools that work great, how we might be able to enhance those tools that we have today and certainly beef up the inadequacies we've seen just overall in farm policy so we don't have to seek after ad hoc as repeatedly as what we have had to.
And with current prices, there may not be any ad hoc. Joe Jansen, University of Illinois ag economist on soybeans.
Those planted acreage reductions for corn have led to planted acreage increases, 91 million acres estimated to be planted for soybeans this spring. That's up about 4 million bushels from last year. This combined with trend line yields has led to production that's, you know, significantly higher than last year, an increase of about 200 million bushels for soybeans. This has also led to increases in use, in particular, USDA revising exports up about 60 million bushels from where they were last year, about 2.2 billion bushels. This increase in planted acreage and with expected or trend line yields leads to a slight increase in the stocks to use ratio, stocks to use increasing by about 1.5% from last year. But still a historically tight stocks to use picture for soybeans.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Thank your field staff. Call in and check in with them. Make sure you've got everything you need up to date.
When navigating USDA programs, Administrator of the FSA, Zach Ducheneau, says,
a big thank you goes out to all of our county employees who have said, hey, we've got to find a better way to do this. We've got to have the information more timely, and we are making sure that we're listening to them. I get a chance to visit in these county offices every day, and we do our best to extend our gratitude to them. And oftentimes, they're put in a position where they've got to be the person telling the producer no. And that's never their job. We want to change the culture here, help them know that their job is to advocate for those producers and inclusion. And we just ask that our producers extend that appreciation to the staff, because they're working super hard for you. We want them to hear it firsthand instead of from the likes of me.